and welcome to episode 180 of the Rustical Gaming Podcast. I'm your host and GM, Alex Newell, and with me today I have...
Ben Meredith.
Bryn Monroe.
Lydia Nicholas.
And Helen Gould.
And who are you playing?
Zolf Smith.
Hamid Salah Harun Altahan.
Sel Sidebottom.
And Azu. And everything's fine. Everyone's had like two square meals.
Yeah.
And a night's sleep apart from Zolf, because, you know, Zolf.
No. We've had a night's sleep now.
Oh, yeah. No, even you've had a night's sleep now.
Alex, you gave us a recovery night's sleep, a kind of recovery chill out day, and then another night's sleep.
Yeah, a bonus night's sleep.
Like,
we didn't even have to roll will saves for the second one.
And did anyone notice, by the way, that the second that rest day started, I was like, I don't know what this looks like. Yeah. Help me, people. what does one do with these? But thankfully, I've managed to get everyone back into a room for conversation.
And the young person has been holding their breath for a whole week.
Oh, they're gone properly blue, actually. Oh, it's awful. No, okay. So what I am going to do then is pick up, unsurprisingly, exactly where we left off. The young person speaks. I, Cantu, representative of Kaltesh, pleased to welcome you all, and... They look a little bit nervous for a moment. They look to the older ones who just sort of give a benign nod. Aww. And I am here to first offer you formal greetings. I know that you have all been here a long time, and I am pleased that you have been able to be helped. We now are here to sit and discuss everything. They sit down abruptly. The potentially oldest looking one, this is a extremely elderly looking man, completely bald pate, quite shrunken in on themselves. They stand and take a moment, settle themselves. This is well said. I, Konta, representative of Numi Torum, would like to discuss what it is that you intend. What are your goals? Why are you here? What is your purpose, I suppose? They very slowly sit and then settle themselves down again.
Does Erhart go to speak?
Erhart looks around, takes a moment to look at Wild, who gives a sort of, sure, go ahead, shrug. Erhart actually looks to you, Zolf, as well, and again gives a sort of...
Yeah, I'll give her a, go on, get on with it, sort of hand gesture.
Erhart takes a moment, stands, hesitates, takes her hat off. Hey, I'm Erhart. You know what? I'm not going to go through all the names. We'll be here a while. We're passing through. Well, we were passing through. We're on our way to basically distant lands, and Borealis kind of ate my ship. We crashed, and we're here. We appreciate the help, don't get me wrong, but we don't actually have any intentions towards you beyond, I think I speak for everyone, making good on the assistance you've rendered, which we obviously hugely appreciate. We weren't here for you, she says kind of bluntly, but it's a good thing that we found you. Well, you found us. Thank you. Erhart sits. The sort of council on the far side take a moment, and then they sort of lean in and give basically a muttered council amongst themselves.
Can I very briefly clarify? The language this is taking place in, I assume that there has been some spells cast. The fact that the council and Sora have spoken so hesitantly, I've been assuming is because when you use comprehend languages and tongues and stuff, there is not perfect translation. And they're very
aware
exactly, of that.
That's exactly the situation.
Kind of, right, okay.
Yeah, so what has happened, I've skipped over this for the sake of brevity, but it's a fair point, is peeking behind the mechanics curtain, there is a druidic spell, which basically is share language. Bang, bang, we share a language. However, that doesn't necessarily give, again, perfect translation, things
like that.
I am working under the assumption, because it's comparatively easy for them to do, and they have spell slot for days, that it is beyond trivial for people to just make sure that everyone in the room is sharing a language.
Yeah.
I am just going to continue just saying that, like, that is the case, because it lasts, like, 24 hours each.
Okay.
They can cast it on multiple people, so it's very easy.
And everyone's just like working hard to avoid idioms and stuff.
Yeah,
to
be
like,
yeah,
I'm
yeah.
trying to use a universal basic communication.
Yeah,
here,
there's a reason that people are being quite basic, is if it was like, it's raining cats and dogs, everyone would be like, what?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Do you ride the cats and the dogs from the sky? Because
why
that's
did you
we...
put them up there like
what?
That? Yeah. Yeah. They're trying to avoid that kind of thing. It's very obvious. I would say as well, whilst they're discussing, is Kantu, who is the youngest one who first spoke, their face can be read like a book. Their heart is on their sleeve. They're very expressive. They swing wildly between great enthusiasm to, oh, yes, yes, no, that's a serious concern. Oh, but there is this, yeah. Oh, but that's a serious concern as well. Like, they haven't quite mastered the art of the council poker face, let's say. Mm. The others are comparatively inscrutable. Even Sora, actually, she seems to sort of close down a little bit. Eventually, a different representative stands. This one, a very, very elderly woman. Seems to be similar in age to the to Konda, who spoke last. I am Shoshva, representative of Kalateshkva. It is true that we have offered you assistance, and we recognize your offer of mutual assistance. There are a few ways that this could be rendered that we would appreciate but not expect. We assume you would wish to repair your vessel. Is this the case? But yeah. Yes, please. Thank you. Yes.
Poor Alex. You're just being five people. My heart goes out to you.
It's fine. Mm. I'll chuck Earhart off the bear and then it'll be Ben's job to do all this. If we were able to accelerate your journey, would this be a positive to you? Or is your journey one where the time is not an issue? Earhart just kind of turns to everyone.
Yes. Yes, quick. Yes.
Very, very much so.
Can you teleport us?
Yeah, how? If this means, like, climbing in a cannon and getting fired across a continent, like, that's fast, but that's not necessarily a solution to the...
Really, Captain?
I don't know. We have ways of doing this for some of you. To do so for all would be a great difficulty.
Perhaps I sort of look to Zolfin Wild. Perhaps we should explain the whole situation as best we're able to.
How long have they got?
Earhart pipes up. I am not explaining the entirety of the situation myself. I'm not saying we shouldn't. I'm just saying I'm not that person.
We can just say we're looking for a cure for a disease. That would get the
well,
thing across.
We still don't exactly know the eventual purpose of the people with the blue veins, and they might one day be a danger to the people here, and if that ends up being the case, these people deserve a warning, apart from anything else.
Okay.
Oh, true.
I hate being the one to do the talking. Okay,
You're the captain.
I know. I like captaining, not...
If you'd like to delegate
captaining. Mr. Smith, please.
Right, oh great, okay, fine.
I mean, Zolf, you're also allowed to delegate, but...
I'm just going to get this done quickly. Right, okay, there are, down south, basically, most of, I know, Europe. Does that mean much?
We understand what you're referring to.
All right,
a
lot of North Africa. Basically, he's been taken over, seemingly, by some sort of, we don't know what, disease, whatever. People are being mind-controlled, I guess, maybe, to some unknown purpose. And basically, the continent has devolved into war, a war which we're losing. We're working to try and find a solution to this problem. We don't know if it will become a problem for you lot up here. Don't even know if the blue vein lot know that you exist, so I don't know, but fair warning. And yes, we would like to go quick. Time is a little bit of the essence. How many people can you send?
Sora stands up. Sora, representative of the clawed one, would ask, what is the nature of this malady? You speak of blue veins, etc. There have been maladies before. Why How do you seek to end a sickness at its source? What is your...
There is some weird technology behind it, I guess. Maybe. We genuinely don't know that much. It's not a disease, and it ain't a magical disease.
You speak of blue veins?
Yeah.
Could you explain?
People got blue veins if they've got the thing, and they don't know how to be embarrassed and stuff. They've got
What is the nature of the malady? Do they sicken? Do they wither? Do they shake? Do they perish?
They're mind controlled. They are working against their friends and family, their loved ones. They know they have all the memories, but none of the feelings. But they can fake that reasonably well, except for like surprise and embarrassment and stuff. And yeah, it's very difficult to identify, which is why basically most of, if not all of Europe, is kind of gone.
Sora looks slightly concerned. The older members of the council are utterly inscrutable. Kantu, the youngest, no roles required, clearly suspects something and is mortified. Like, it's just obvious, like, plain as day written on their face.
Well, like, they're embarrassed.
Interesting.
What do you mean, mortified?
More like, not only that this is awful, but that they think they know something extra. Like, they just clearly do. It's so obvious. They keep looking at the rest of the council members like, am I the only... Anyone noticing?
The people who have the blue veins, they are coordinated. They seem to seek to infect further people, to work together to expand their control. As far as I'm aware, we don't know what the limits of that expansion will be. Where I was brought up, we were always taught that no one lived in this area, that we've obviously just met you, and that was a lie or ignorance taught to us, and perhaps the people with the blue veins have the same belief, but my fear is that they will seek to expand forever and may end up expanding in this direction. I think that it behooves all people to try and work out a way to deal with that problem. We've been investigating for a while. Our last investigation happened far in the east, and we were heading back west and north to try and pursue the next step in the investigation. But the truth is we've always been short of information. We've never really understood exactly what the malady is. All we know is that people are, we use the language of disease. Is that how it seems to spread? But it is not exactly a disease. People do not develop the blue vein straight away, and one of the major weapons of this enemy force is to infect someone and to have them infiltrate before the blue veins appear.
Elderly woman who has not yet spoken raises her hand to stop you?
Yeah, Hammond stops instantly.
This woman has a shock of white hair, very similar to Wild and Sasser and so on. Again, this is like a very pure, burnished white. They tentatively stand as well. I, Sumutniel, representative of Yerlik, would ask these people with their malady, do they act as one?
Yeah.
Yes.
She sort of gestures to your hand. Sorry, gestures with her hand to, like, hold and sit, and then they have a council, basically, amongst themselves and muttering again. Again, Kantu, bless them. Again, can be easily read like a book. They seem mortified. Like, it looks like they're simultaneously, like, afraid, actively afraid, very, very concerned, very, very worried, very confused. This is clearly a bombshell that the others are giving you sort of nothing on. And Kantu's like, what are we going to do? Oh, no! And they're all like, it's fine, everything's fine. It's not, though, is it? Because of the big secret! Like, they're really, really just broadcasting loud and clear.
Intriguing.
At which point, the first elderly man who spoke stands up again. I, Konda, representative of Numitorum, thank you for your conversation and for your honesty. We believe we have relevant information that we can share that should behoove both of us. But before we do so, we must also let you know we received a visitor soon after yourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Not in itself an impossibility, but certainly a... Though I may represent Numitorum, I do not always assume coincidence versus destiny. These things are more often guided by people.
What?
What did they look like?
They are as you, to a degree. They are orcish.
Oh!
They claim to know yourself, Azu.
Wait, what?
Though we are normally so welcoming, we are hesitant to believe this is coincidence.
Did they give a name?
They described themselves as a chinois.
Oh! As he does exactly what I just did and just covers like half her face with her hands.
They asked that they might speak with you of utmost importance. We took a liberty of confirming no ill intent before we might make you aware, for fear that you were perhaps pursued by one who had caused your crash, something similar. We knew very little. Everything you have said broadly agrees. We think it might be best that you meet this person before we continue our discussions.
How is this relevant to the malady?
They claimed that this meeting with Azu would be of the utmost importance with regards to the malady.
Oh, no.
What if they found us? Oh.
They claimed that they came with answers that they might assist you and provide assistance.
We can't trust this
person, Azu.
Wait, how did they get here? Did they just appear? Was there a weird man with them?
Kondar looks at you for a moment and goes, yes, they were not seen to appear as such, but when they were first seen, there was a stranger with them, a cowled figure who then disappeared.
A weird shouting man? No, what, cowled?
A cowled figure.
Cowled?
They wore a
I know what cowled means.
Oh.
Do we need to suggest quarantine protocols at this point?
Yep.
Azu gets up and starts pacing around the room. She's wringing her hands.
Right, okay, one thing then. We don't know how this malady is spread. We have literally no idea. All we know is that the symptoms usually appear after about 7 days. So we can only trust this person if after 7 days they don't show any symptoms. And by the by, the blue veins can manifest anywhere on the body. So, you know.
This Chinhua claimed that the veins, as you put them, would appear first beneath the eyelids within a day.
That's new. I'll look at Wild.
Oh.
Wild's like, I mean, I've been out of the loop for a while. That could be true. I don't know that that's demonstrably not true.
But that's also a really good lie if it isn't true.
Yes, it is.
So, no, we need to wait 7 days and then we can trust them after 7 days and that might be new intel. But
Wild sort of stands. Has this person been wandering freely? Have they met everyone in the town? Like, what happened here? No, once they were found, as they did not announce themselves, nor were they invited, they were kept aside, lest they wish ill.
You'll need to quarantine everyone who came in contact, I suppose. It'll be my fault.
Azu, who is this person?
No, it's my ex-fiancé man, my potter.
Azu, quickly, it's not your fault.
No,
of course
not.
We're here. It is collectively.
Yes.
But he's...
Cantu sort of stands, even though they're the first person to stand while someone else is standing, and just kind of looks meaningfully at Kondar, who then settles down. But Cantu rattles it out. I, Cantu, representative of Kaltes, with the greatest respect, do we need to take action immediately? Are we saying that we should absolutely ensure that this person does not leave and that they are kept where they are and that anyone who has been with them is themselves isolated?
Yes.
I would formally request that this council be stopped so that we can take such action and then reconvene. The rest of the council take a moment, slowly raise their hands. Obviously a little bit quicker. Cantu looks to all of you, gives us a slight head bow. I thank you and beg your forgiveness, and then just sprints out of the council tent. Just legs it.
Oh, no.
Shoshva pipes up. This is the older woman. You will forgive, of course. Cantu's vigour. It has its place in important matters.
Oh.
Probably right to do so, to be honest.
Yes.
Though it is not normal, we would be happy to continue to discuss with you whilst Cantu makes arrangements.
I don't know if we can, because we don't know who people who met Chinua, if they then spoke to other people, and then they spoke to other people. We could all... Oh, Azu sits down hard on the floor.
Yeah, you look, you're right, but it's unlikely. But if we... Maybe we act now, we acted soon enough, and if we didn't, then whatever. There's nothing we can do about it, so... let's just do what we can and see how it works.
Is it possible that you yourselves could be carrying the malady?
It's as possible as you lot now. And not from external sources, no. We've been basically quarantined for like, I don't know, weeks.
We understand.
Months.
Over 3 weeks now since we took off. Yes, on some level, if people are travelling in groups, you have to... Hamid will spend a little time explaining the protocols that they've been living under as best he can, given that he hasn't lived under them that long, but just to make sure that the information, without going into real detail.
Shoshva takes a moment and looks to Sumudnyel and sort of gives a small gesture, then sits. Sumudnyel sits and seems very, very deep in thought. This is the one with the shock of white hair. She seems very, very deep in thought. Considering for a long time. Eventually she stands and looks at all of you. As we are not in formal council, you will forgive my informality.
Of course.
What you describe as a malady is known to us in some ways, though not as a malady.
What?
Azu shoots up again. What do you mean?
It is hard to explain. It does not behave in the manner to which you describe, but your description of the blue veins, of the behaving of one, it seems to my eye, at least, she looks at the rest of the council, who sort of give a mild nod. It seems to be some kind of corruption of the Garden of Yelik.
What's the Garden of Yelik?
I've not heard of it behaving in this way, but certain similarities cannot be denied.
I describe the seed that we're going to Svalbard to investigate. Does that mean anything to you?
Oh, yes.
I get the seed out.
Oh, yeah, we've got it. Forget about that.
They look at it. How did you come by this?
Yeah, well...
That's a long story.
May I hold it?
I suppose so.
You probably make more use of it than we can.
She holds out her hand, which has a slight tremor to it, but she holds it out to take the seed from you if you offer it.
Yeah.
She holds it in one hand and closes her eyes for a moment, seems to mutter something, and then strokes her finger down it from one end to the other. And a small blue bloom takes shape at the tip end of it.
Should we be worried about that?
She strokes her finger in the opposite direction and the bloom recedes back into the seed. This is a Yerlik seed, yes.
Great. All right, so basically, probably what's happened is they took this thing, whatever it is, and changed it, manipulated it to turn it into something that will...
How long ago? This is the first time they've interrupted. How long ago did they make this change?
How long ago is... How old's the campaign, Alex? I ain't got a clue now.
A little under 2 years, technically, in-game time.
Yeah, about that.
It's time to take a break. Why don't we spend that break explaining the entire plot of the campaign to these people?
Managing diabetes can involve a lot of guesswork, carbs, insulin, exercise. Everything affects your ability to keep your glucose levels in range. InPen can help. This affordable, reusable insulin pen automatically communicates with a smart app to keep track of insulin doses, makes dose recommendations, and even reminds you when to dose. With InPen, you can guess less and live more for as little as $35 per year. Visit myinpen.com to learn more. $35 offer available to those with commercial insurance. Terms and conditions apply. Talk to your doctor about whether InPen is right for you. Prescription and proper settings required. Under age 7 requires adult supervision. Visit myinpen.com.
Does your wallet need to go on a diet? Getting a better night's sleep has never been more affordable, especially if you overspent in the online January sales. With a Nectar mattress, prices start at just $499, and you get $399 in accessories thrown in, a 365-night home trial, and a forever warranty. Go to NectarSleep.com.
And welcome back. Sumudnyel takes a moment, sits heavily, and then has another conversation with the rest of the council. Unfortunately, you have very little insight into this conversation because we do not have Kantu visually semaphoring every emotion passing through their face. But the discussion takes a while. And by a while, I mean like eventually Wild, you know, starts up a side conversation effectively going... This is new.
Yep.
Mm. Yeah.
I'll tell you now, at the risk of overshare, this is not something anyone's talking about.
But it explains why it reminded me of a mushroom when I saw in the in Shoween's thing room.
Yeah.
Yes, like a plant.
Yeah. And it explains how it can get round, well, your supposed immunity.
Mm.
Wild seems to have a almost inappropriate smile. I'd say everyone give me an sense motive.
Sense motive.
Look at me remembering the system we're playing.
Right, I'm actually good at this, I think.
19.
13.
Bah.
11.
Zolf 17. Is going to get a bonus to this.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, 17 plus whatever.
Because your hearts are in tune.
Aww. In which case, then, I'd say Azu and Zolf, actually.
Okay.
It would be easy to misread this, and I would say that to Sel and Hamid, this is certainly your first takeaway, that it would be easy to receive this as and quite poorly. This is someone smiling at, although a revelation, pretty big news or whatever, for both Azu from just a place of perceptiveness and Zolf from a place of familiarity. Zolf especially, you just know this. This will be the first real breakthrough Wild has had in a long time. Shoween was cleanup. Shoween was chasing a dead lead. This is the first real lead that you've had that's like new information, completely hot off the press in like a year and a half. This is Wild effectively just being like, I was right.
This is essentially a lifeline. Ha-ha. Right?
We're back on.
Yeah, exactly. This is like, mad? They said I was mad to chase across the world. Who's mad now? But yeah, Wild's like, this, we can't pass this. If we were travelling to Svalbard to find out what this seed is and we found the source of the seed, that's got to be a break, right?
Seems that way.
We'll need to find out what it does and...
Yeah, depends on what the information we get about it is.
Yeah.
But at least it's information.
And why Chinwa's here too.
Yeah, well. I don't want to think about it.
I'm hoping Einstein, but it might be the cult.
We don't have enough information either way.
I give Azu a big hug.
Aww. Azu's going to return the hug, obviously.
Azu, I don't want to be tactless, but is your ex possibly chasing you because they are your ex? Or is it...
Are they out to get you?
Are they
gunning for you?
No. Or, our last letters were quite friendly. Oh, no, maybe... No, but he knows it's over. We just took different directions, like I...
Lily, not... Oh, no.
Oh, well, yeah, oh. Oh, no.
It's going to be okay, Azu.
You can't know that.
Yeah, but we're saying it, aren't we? Come on. Like, yes, no.
Azu, whatever happens, you've got us, right?
You don't know it's bad. You fear it's bad, but you don't know it's bad.
What he said.
All we know is that someone has turned up that we didn't expect and that, thank, you know, the powers that be, that these people spotted them seemingly quickly and decided to keep them aside. From what I'm hearing is, if their turning up was an inevitability, you know, it could have gone a lot worse.
But he shouldn't be involved in this. He should be... in his little house, making little vases.
I don't
vases.
Think you get to decide what he should... Or they. Is it a he?
He.
He. I don't think you get to decide what he should be doing, if, you know...
Bearing in mind that, like, most of the European refugees went south.
Oh.
Realistically, there's no way that you're... I'm sorry to say, there's no way that your village don't know what's happening by this point.
Oh.
There may not be, you know... heavily affected, but they'll know.
It's a conflict that affects the whole world, a sort of a war of the whole world.
Sel sticks up their hand and is like, we keep forgetting that there are several continents that, that as far as I know, have not yet been encompassed. So, like, yes, eventually encompass the whole world, but the world is extremely large.
No, that's a fair point. Sel, you've been in the Americas and that. You heard of any of this... Yerlik stuff?
No, and it's probably I may be a lot less helpful than maybe appears, because I mostly was involved with my father's people who was actually English, and with a lot of things that happened, I wasn't a lot of the final few years that I was there, I was traveling somewhat. So if this is deep magical knowledge, I wouldn't necessarily have gained that while I was growing up, because that was not what our town was really focused on. But also when I left there, or when it wasn't, Cell is babbling slightly. And then after that, I was traveling on the ship
Barnes puts his hand on Cell's shoulder. It's fine. It's okay not to know.
I'm sorry. I could have researched more, but it's not really my area of expertise.
That's all right. It's okay.
That's why we were going to Svalbard. Yeah. Can't be an expert in everything.
Well, yeah. I'm working on it.
You can't be an expert on everything yet?
Yeah.
At which point, Summer Njöl stands again. We offer you an invitation we would never normally offer, that we might share our knowledge to deal with this malady you describe, and at the same time better understand the sickness within the Garden of Jurlik.
Thank you.
If you are willing, we would bring you on a journey to the garden that you might see and so understand.
Yes.
That we can talk in this way.
Yes, please, yes.
If it will help us in our quest, we'd be honoured and grateful.
With Sora's permission, Sora gives a nod, I would ask that we could not take all of you.
How many?
The journey is less than a day by flight. We could take 4, perhaps 5 of you.
I can fly myself, if it's only for an hour, and then I need like an hour break, and then another hour, and then
a generous gift. But the journey is though less than a day longer than this. We would ask you to pick 4, perhaps 5 people to make the journey with us that we might show you.
Easy enough, us 4. Point at the PCs and we're
thank you. If you'd have sat there and gone,
no,
right,
obviously
right,
not.
Barnes, thingy,
well,
blah,
it should
blah,
actually be Wild and Earhart, Carter and Barnes and Zolf. Those have been the ones that have been fighting together for you.
Please don't do that
not
to me. Right. Please don't.
Not Earhart, actually.
Please don't do that to me.
Yeah.
At some point, this campaign is just going to deteriorate to me sat in a soundproof room talking to myself and recording
it's okay.
it.
Like, it's okay.
You mean like Magnus look, does? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to do that. I already do
we're
that.
We're back to the PCs and our handler.
Oh, thank God. Thank you. Thank you for saving me from myself. Very well. Given the pressing nature of this, we would ask if you can ready yourselves. I will be setting off immediately.
Sorry. Yes. Azu, are you okay with this? I don't know, like with...
Yes.
Okay. Right.
Yes. Just a moment. And Azu's going to go and say goodbye to Kiko and try to... Like, I mean, I assume Kiko's like heard all of this, so...
Oh, yeah, of course. Kiko's deliberately doing what Kiko does, which is staying quiet to get a better lay of the land, because this is a group of people who like to talk a lot, and so listening is a very valuable skill to have.
Okay.
Kiko's there and just says, it's fine, you've got this. Where am I going to go?
But I'm going.
Oh, you're fine, look at you. You're the biggest badass I ever met.
Oh!
Yeah.
Oh.
And I grew up on stories of her pointing to Earhart.
Helen's face is constantly so adorable, and I just wish our listeners could see what we get to see.
Just while I have you, though, do I need to worry about this Chinhua person?
No, we're just friends now. We were going to be married once, but not anymore, obviously. But I'll try not to fall out of the... Oh... Well, take care of everyone.
Yeah, of course.
Because you also have a badass.
There's a bomb and that bomb is dead ass! Woo!
Kiku raises an eyebrow, gives you a quick kiss, and then basically shoves you to like, go on, get on with you.
Okay, bye. Bye.
Which I assume mainly consists of her shoving herself back on Azu.
Hammond would like to have a very quick chat with Skrark.
Yeah.
Skrark, I mean, between the two of us, we probably weigh about the same as a other person. If you want to come with us, I might be able to ask, but I don't know how much this quest means to you, and I know you said you're here to gather information from your people. It seems to me that you could have a pretty good opportunity to learn from our hosts. What do you think?
I'd normally send one of the others, but... You know, out come the wings.
Yeah.
Might make a bit more sense to go myself. Yeah, if you'd ask. No, you know what? I'll ask. I want to go as well. Summit Neil takes a moment.
I'll repeat my point from just now to our host, which is, I mean, the two of us together, we're not, you know, if it's five people, we're, depending on the calculation, as it were.
I'm not as young as I once was, but you are not sizable. this should be fine. In which case, if we are agreed, if you can ready yourself for a day's journey, you will not be... You will be cold. Very cold.
Yep.
Well, I mean, I can take care of that.
Oh, yes!
Oh, I completely forgot.
Okay, who wants to cast Endure Elements on us all?
I mean, I don't have to prepare spells, so I can just do it without having to worry about other things.
You will forgive me if I ask for some privacy whilst I make my own preparations. Of course. I'm assuming that everyone heads out of the conical build and off the bears, gently vibrating yes. Back and back up onto the foundations of the town.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, I'm going to be saying that I Zolf canonically forgot to re-prepare spells because I can't be arsed, and I'll do it later.
God.
Mate, I've got like 20 spells I need to reselect every day.
I can't hear you over an entire city full of people. Say again.
I will cast Endure Elements 6 times.
You don't need to do it on Zell because they can do it on themselves.
I will cast Endure Elements 5 times.
Yeah, because their spells only work for them, so they might as well use up.
Yep, yep.
Yeah. Azu can cast Endure Elements on herself as well, but she'll let Hamid do it.
You have the time to make whatever preparations that you desire for the journey. I'm assuming Endure Elements straight out the gate. Is there any further long-term spell casting you would like to do prior to your journey?
No.
Okay. In which case then, after a little period of time, outstep both Sora and Sumudnil. Sora seems very much... Though there's no, like, determined regalia where it's like, you know, there's no stripes or colouring or differences, really. Sora very much seems to be a step behind Sumudnil at all times. And Sumudnil starts to speak. Myself and Sora will be transporting you. To make this distance, it's going to be easier to do so as eagles. We would ask one last thing of you before we depart, which is that what we are to share with you is not to be shared with others. You may share it with your... crew, given the situation, but we would ask a level of secrecy, as this, the place where the resurrections was not hallowed, this is.
Makes sense. The whole situation down south is entirely because somebody couldn't keep a secret, so we understand the importance.
We thank you. Very well. Please step back and do not be alarmed. Basically, unsurprisingly, both Sora and Sumudnil transform into full-blown eagles of the very, very large variety. Sumudnil is pure white. Think sort of like the whitest bits of snow eagle type deal, like end to end. Sora is, as described before, they then very, very carefully settle themselves and basically lay themselves out in such a way that they're kind of gesturing with a claw, which is, I'm just going to have to say it. You're going to get picked up with claws. Like, this is how this is going to happen.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
They're being very careful about it, but it's not like a sack is brought. They're just like, you know, claws, come on. Yeah. I'm assuming that everyone just is okay with this.
Yeah.
We'll make it work. Mm.
Sure. In which case then, you're immediately lifted straight off from the open area that the conical structure is within. And for the first time, really, even including the crane, you didn't get that elevation. As you leap up into the sky, you get your first proper view of where you've been, which is, as your vertical distance increases and you pull away from, well, the bear, firstly, you see the town stretching out as a very, very, you know, dense, overlapping, layered structure. But it becomes very clear to you that you can see that there is a slight curvature to the town. And with that curvature, there are large... The best way to describe it is, again, sort of crane, think like freight transport type things in the corners and the edges. And enormous, massive pulley systems of huge threaded rope. And it looks like effectively this large curved foundation is genuinely sat upon the back of the largest, absolutely largest bear you can imagine in terms of scale. It already starts to break your sense of scale. Like, you stop being able to see people in the town as you start being able to see the whole creature. It is walking very slowly and very carefully, picking itself along the ground. It turns its head really slowly and then turns itself back. The best description is it doesn't appear to just be a large creature. It seems to genuinely be moving very slowly for a larger creature. It seems quite older as well. There's the sense of age there, you know, there's a certain grizzling to the snout and so on. But the town itself, once you've taken into the full scale, this really isn't a huge weight on the back of it. Like, the bear is massive and there is a comparatively smaller space upon its back, which is the town proper. There appears to be, towards the front of the town, closer towards the neck, the sort of nape of the bear, where there's a sort of big shaggy fur, there appears to be almost like a gatehouse with a long bridge leading out over the neck to a smaller gatehouse towards the skull of the bear. And everyone give me a perception check.
Ooh.
22.
17.
29.
31.
Cell and Zolf only. As you're looking, at first it appears to be an optical illusion. You get the distinct sense that there has always been a small amount of, you know, borealis towards the edges, maybe. I don't mean a thick wall, but, you know, there's always been elements of it. It is clear to your eye, though it takes a little moment for you to first notice it, that it is being drawn towards the bear ever so slightly. And I don't mean just en masse. I mean, think if you were to take a big, like, a large candy floss, and you were to take out a single strand and it sort of makes that long thin. It seems to be being drawn in towards the bear. Mm-hmm. And that weather pattern that you were seeing, Azu earlier, is a lot more apparent.
Yeah.
There is a weird dead zone around this enormous creature that effectively seems to be some kind of localized weather, some kind of localized effect. However, as you start flying, you start leaving this area of localized weather. And the first thing that you start to notice is the eagle's flight, where at first it was straight, starts to take these dips and these sweeps and these dives. And you all start to realize that what they're doing is they're getting ahead of curls of borealis and things like that, where they're deliberately picking and plotting a route to navigate around it. To be clear, it doesn't seem like they are just beelining in one direction. It really does seem to be that they are picking a route, and it's very obvious that there's a reason that this is a day's journey. It's not because it's a day away, it's because you're having to do a certain amount of, like, doubling back and so on. The fact that they can fly with wing beats instead of a vehicle, you would not be able to replicate this journey in an airship. Like, that cell to your eye, no one could. There's a material limitation here. You can't get that kind of maneuverability, and you would have just been plowing through banks of borealis, which is what got you in this mess to a degree in the first place.
I think
place.
Cell would also realise that they would not be able to fly this well. Like,
oh, yeah.
Like proper beast mode. Like, lovely big bat wings and wood. Yeah, they are not as skilled as these lifelong eagle flyers.
They do seem to be heading broadly south again rather than north. However, they seem to be heading towards the southwest. There are moments where, like, there's a gentle, like, movement in the claws where they may be shuffling you all around a bit, make things a bit more comfy or make things a bit easier and so on. But it's almost hypnotic. It's just that constant of the slow wing beat. And again. And, yeah, the land just unrolls underneath you. It's very clear that you are heading towards a more mountainous region from where you were. From this vantage point, it's clear that you must have landed comparatively near to some, basically, foothills, mm-hmm. and that you are heading straight into the most mountainous region that it can get to. The day wears on, and the day wears on. We pass midday with them still flying along and just slowly beating on. Eventually, you manage to pass through the sort of borealis that was kicking around. Whether that's broadly true or not, you're past whatever need they had for swerving around, and it does settle down into something a lot more rhythmic. Finally, I would say, as the afternoon wears on, you're not facing sunset yet, but it's certainly apparent that you are going to be arriving and there when it's getting dark. the mountains have been growing steeper. They've been going more precipitous. They've been growing increasingly weather-beaten and weather-worn, craggy. If any of you know what I mean by, like, Ice Age geography, sharp rocks, thick, chunky bits that have fallen off, sheer cliffs.
Massive
this is
valleys.
A landscape. Yeah, this is a landscape that has been chewed by the movements of continents and the movements of time.
Yeah.
And the weather itself around you is getting significantly more, like, blustery, a lot more flurries of snow and so on. And then as you could progress, you notice a speck of pure blue just beyond an upcoming peak.
Hmm.
And as you draw nearer, that blue, this isn't the blue of ice. We're talking like an aquamarine blue, vivid, lurid. Hmm. It is clearly not of the mountain. It is something upon it. And as the eagles swing round this nearest mountain, you're exposed to, I've forgotten the word for it, not a caldera. It is the one where you have a natural valley, but between multiple peaks. So it's not a trough valley. It's more like a bowl. I don't know how to describe it. I've forgotten
no
the word.
Idea, mate. Bowl valley.
I always know them from hiking as cauldrons. Like, you know, you hike around this cauldron or that cauldron, whatever. Basically a large bowl valley, let's call it, which is absolutely full of large, bright blue flowering trees. And by large, at first you're like, oh, we're nearer than we thought. Oh no, these are massive. These are enormous trees. And that lurid blue seems to be the blue of some petals, which are coming loose from the trees themselves and are sweeping out across the mountainside and being basically sprayed up almost one mountainside where the wind is blowing them into the snow where they are being held. The eagles come lower and start coming in slower, and finally they, you know, a rapid increase of wing beats, and they settle upon a sharp cliff overlooking this large, not orchard, I've forgotten, wood, basically. this large flowering wood. The plants do not look like they belong here. These are flowering plants that look like they belong in some temperate climate 1,000 miles south of here. But they are all over the cauldron and they are in full bloom. But as you look, as you notice, you see that there is a portion of dead plants towards the centre of this area. And it is not a perfect circle or anything like that. It's not that something's landed. There appears to be a spreading sickness within the plants that is originating in the centre.
Mm-hmm.
Behind you, Sumut Njöl and Sora transform back. And Sumut Njöl steps forward and goes, this malady that you see is what began at the times that you say you first became aware of your malady. And this is the garden of Jurlik. This is the garden where one can follow the path from life to death and back. And I'm going to end the episode there.
Oh, my God.
We're all
God.
Just sitting here open-mouthed.
Yeah,
being like,
yeah. Like,
what?
Yeah, like, well, how do you
people
react?
Keep saying they want lore. There
no,
you go.
This is awesome. Yeah. This is awesome.
This is, to my eye, this is all perfectly transparent. All the mysteries are solved. I could basically end the campaign here because it's just a clear
Alex,
straight
Alex,
run,
Alex,
right?
Alex. The name of the campaign is Erasing the Line.
Yeah.
Is that the line between life and death?
Bryn, if you for a moment think I would limit myself
reason.
To merely yeah. one interpretation of a title. Goodness.
Fair.
Come on, man.
Some proper high fantasy here.
Yeah, it's been ages. Yeah. I've been building to it for ages. I had to get you to the edge of the world, but there you go. Ha! I knew we could do it.
How long do we have to wait for our next recording? I want to know what happened.
Lord.
I want to know more, Alex. I need more lore.
Tough. You can wait a couple of months like everyone else, right? Bye.
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 Rusty Quill Gaming is a podcast distributed by Rusty Quill and licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Sharealike 4.0 international license. Today's episode was directed by Alexander J. Newell and produced by Hannah Preisinger. To subscribe, buy merchandise, or join our Patreon, visit rustyquill.com. Rate and review us online, tweet us at @TheRustyQuill, visit us on Facebook, or email us via mail@rustyquill.com. Join our community on the Discord or via Reddit at r/rustyquill. Thanks for listening.
Acast powers some of the world's best podcasts. Here's a show we recommend.
In the latest episode of History This Week, we take a closer look at a failed insurrection at the U.S. Capitol building in 1861, when the nation was on the cusp of a civil war. Nearly 160 years later, what can we learn from this moment when democracy was challenged? And check out all our episodes this month as History This Week celebrates Black History Month. Last week, we covered the Greensboro sit-ins that sparked a media firestorm and inspired mass sit-ins across the country. Next week, we travel to Australia and witness Sydney students taking a freedom ride of their own for Aboriginal civil rights. After that, we'll be exploring the origins of jazz. For these stories and more, subscribe to History This Week wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast recommends.